It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What is up, NFL fans? Welcome back to another NFL Whip Around. Quick call to action. If you're watching us on YouTube, like the channel, subscribe. We appreciate it. It does help. And make sure if you're listening on audio side, Spotify or Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating. It really does help. I'm Jeff Hartman, joined by Coach Kevin Smith. What's up, Coach? How's it going?
Going great. We're here, Jeff. We've made it to draft week. Very exciting.
Days away, man. I feel like sometimes this horse gets beaten to death so many times. How many times can we talk about players that aren't even going to play for another, I don't know how many months, but it just goes to talk about the popularity, right, of the NFL draft. It's become something that, and it wasn't this popular when I was a kid. It wasn't certainly for you, right?
Well, what are you trying to say, Jeff, that I'm
Well, I'm trying to say that you're a little bit older than I am.
No, you're right. I remember when, like, Mel Kiper was the only guy doing anything pre-internet. ESPN was the only network that showed the draft. They only showed the first round, and Mel Kiper was like your analyst, and he had like a ridiculous head of hair, and everybody was like, who's this goofball? But who knew, man? Who knew what an industry Mel would launch?
Yeah, I give him credit. You know, he's from Baltimore, wrote for the Baltimore Sun for years, and he saw that this draft is going to be something much bigger. But let's get things started. We're going to do what we always do, 5 topics here, not a player profile at the end. We'll get to that at the end of the show. But let's talk about how this big picture question of how round one last year's round one of the 2023 NFL draft averaged 11.3 million viewers. To put that into context, that's twice the number who tuned into the NBA's opening playoff games this past weekend. Think about that. Twice the number. How do you think, Coach, a non-sporting event like the draft can dwarf an opening round of the playoffs of a major sport like basketball? Why do you think it's so popular?
Right. Yeah, that's an incredible number. When I read that, I was like, whoa. I knew that the draft did well. I just don't think when you put it in that perspective, it's still surprising. I think what the draft offers is hope. I think the draft offers the intrigue of not knowing what your team will do, but because everybody can have an opinion on it, everybody, you know, as you said at the beginning of the show, we read and digest all this information, and we've all got our hopes up that our favorite team will take a certain guy. You fall in love with a certain guy. That it creates a drama that's unlike anything else in sports. There's no equivalent to the NFL draft. There's lots of NBA playoff games, but there's nothing that you can say, oh, the NFL draft is like blank. Well, you know, you and I equate it to Christmas morning, which is not a sporting event. Yeah. So I think it's that combination of hope and intrigue that is so fascinating.
Well, let's run with this for a second. You said it's like Christmas morning, and I agree 100%. What is so great about Christmas morning when you're a kid? And hell, even as a parent, what is so great about, in your opinion, Coach? I know you're a Grinch. We talked about that last Christmas, but what's so great about Christmas, in your opinion? Let's see if we have the same answer.
It's the not knowing.
Yes. The not knowing what you're... There it is. The unknown. Because not only do we not know, we're Steeler fans, who the Steelers are going to take at 20, if they go at 20 and not trade anywhere, we don't know what trades could happen. we don't know that one player that's picked way earlier than anyone projected. And I think that involves that, that provides so much intrigue. Unlike the regular season where it's this team versus this team, who wins, who's the better team. And then we'll figure out the standings afterwards. This is a, the Steelers pick 20th, but what the teams do in 1 to 10 can impact what the team sees at 20 or beyond or any number in the draft order. I think it's the complete, it's the hope. I agree 100% with what you said, but it's also the fact that no one knows what's going to happen. For instance, what if Drake May was selected number one overall? Now, I don't think that's going to happen, but let's just say that it did. Well, what would happen then? Would it completely upset the apple cart and it would toss everything up on its head? I don't know. Coach, do you agree that the unknown is one of the main reasons why this draft is so awesome?
Absolutely. And there's always this unfolding human drama as well. Yeah. Like when Aaron Rodgers fell all the way to the end of the first round. I mean, Drake May, I think the way that things are kind of trending is more likely to be your big faller. The guy that, you know, that they keep showing in the green room, you know, and he's got it in door, you know, there he is on his phone trying not to like look, you know, heartbroken or whatever. But, and we don't know, right? There's always going to be an interesting human story. There's always going to be a shocking pick. There's always going to be a team that picks a guy out of the blue that ESPN doesn't even have a draft profile for, you know, like where you're like, where did this come from? And it's fascinating. And in real time, if you really love the sport, you get to kind of be a real-time GM for your own team as these things are happening. And you say, oh, wait, all right, that guy moved. What if we go up and get this guy? And, you know, it's fun, man. It's like when you're a little kid and you're always, you're pretending stuff. I'm still, this is what a nerd I am, but I'm still kind of like watching the draft. I'm just like pretending to be a GM. Like, oh, I would do this. I would do that. And there's nothing like it.
The NFL also does a phenomenal job with the human element of the draft. So I'll give you an example. In 2017, in the third round, the Pittsburgh Steelers took James Conner. James Conner was coming off cancer. You know, he had just battled through chemotherapy and all the cancer. He's cancer-free. The Steelers take this kid from Pitt, from Erie, Pennsylvania. And it was such a great story. And you know what? I love that part of it. I love seeing the celebrations. These players are getting generational money. Now with NIL, maybe not as much as it used to be. Who can remember in 2017, that same draft in the second round, the Steelers take Juju Smith-Schuster out of USC and he runs and jumps in the ocean. Like those are awesome celebrations. I love all of it. And my wife says like, you don't hate the draft weekend. It's a ton of work. I will say that, but I love the draft. Like the draft is honestly one of my favorite sporting events, and it's not even a sporting event of the entire year. And that sounds really weird to say out loud.
Yeah. And I'm going to, you know, my own podcast, The Call Sheet, I'm going to talk about this for a little bit on the show this week, but I went to the draft when it was in Philadelphia I think it was 2017, but that first of all, it was a bucket list thing. Yeah. And second of all, there's nothing like it. It's like, it's a carnival of football geeks and people who aren't even there for the football, just because it's a fascinating party. I mean, they do such a great job turning it into just a fun, memorable event. And so the league's marketed this thing masterfully.
Yeah. I mean, shoot, it wasn't that long ago. It was always at Radio City Music Hall in New York City. And then they decided, let's move it around. It's in Detroit this year. It's in Green Bay the year after. And then the city of Pittsburgh is trying to get it after that, which will be pretty cool. I will be in attendance if they're in Pittsburgh. I will say that right now. All right, let's go to our next topic, the best landing spots for the top quarterbacks. We'll say that those top quarterbacks are, last names, Williams, Daniels, May, and McCarthy. If you don't know those names by now, then you haven't been paying attention. So what do you think are the best landing spots for these quarterbacks, Coach?
Right. So we know that the Bears and Williams have had, you know, this sort of relationship throughout the entire draft season. It would be shocking if he went anywhere else. So I'll focus on the other guys. Daniels is interesting because he's pretty much said like he doesn't want to play for the Commanders.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's got an attachment to the Raiders, but the Raiders don't pick until 13th. I don't know if where he's going to wind up. I don't necessarily know if he's a great fit for Washington's system. You know, they're going to be an air raid team with Cliff Kingsbury as their offensive coordinator. A lot of quick decision making, you know, a lot of short throws, a lot of timing routes. I really kind of see JJ McCarthy as a good fit for them. He played in a pro style offense. I think McCarthy is going to be the surprise riser in the first round among all these quarterbacks, and the guy that I think will probably go from being maybe picked around 11 or 12. I can definitely see him now in the top three, which means one of these guys falls out. And hey, is it May? Is it Daniels? I don't know. New England to me is a bit of a wild card because I really don't know who they like the most. I don't know what they want to do. But don't be shocked if Michael Penix kind of leaps up into the top 12 as all these teams kind of battle for quarterbacks. I think Penix in Minnesota is an interesting mix there. I think that he fits a lot of what they do offensively. So for me, you know, it's Williams to the Bears. I think McCarthy's a great fit in Washington if they choose to go in that direction. I have no idea what New England does, but I really like what Penix to Minnesota.
Well, you think about three teams. You already mentioned the Raiders. You talked about the Vikings and the Denver Broncos. Those three teams are all around, I think, from picks 10 to 13 in that range. They all need quarterbacks. Now, the Raiders might be set up best for, well, if we have to go into a year with Gardner Minshew, he proved he could do it last year with Indianapolis. He could probably do it again for the Las Vegas Raiders. The Broncos traded today, when this is being recorded, Monday, for a former second overall pick. His name escapes me. Come on, Coach.
Zach Wilson.
There you go. I don't think he's the answer there. But nope. You have to wonder, how aggressive are these teams going to be to go up and get one of those guys? So is it Daniels? May? A lot of people are saying that Drake May could go to New England. Okay, that's fine. One of these guys is going to be available. And that's like the end of the top tier. Now you bring up Penix, which goes into our next topic. His stock is skyrocketing. You see stock plummet and skyrocket in this last week leading up to the draft. Yes, Laremy Tunsil is a very severe case of draft stock plummeting, but Penix's stock is rising. Why do you think that is?
Poor Laremy Tunsil, man. For a guy who's as great as he is, an all-pro NFL lineman, you know, nobody will ever get past the gas mask. But I think with Michael Penix, right, you look at his the body of work throughout his college career, and he got better and better and better as he went. And he's older, he's 23, and he put in 6 years in college after the transfers and the injuries and all that. But he has a couple of the tools that NFL evaluators think are absolutes. The first is accuracy. I've been told by NFL coaches that they don't believe that you can really teach accuracy at the NFL level, that either you have it or you don't. And you can improve it to a degree. But if a quarterback is largely inaccurate, he's going to remain, for the most part, inaccurate. And the opposite is true as well. And because of the tiny little windows that you have to throw into in the pros, accuracy matters a whole lot. And Penix is probably the most accurate quarterback in the draft. And he's decisive. He's a decisive quarterback. Now, I think people got spooked by the slow release, and he didn't play particularly well in the national championship game against Michigan, and I think that probably bumped him down. But as you started to poke holes in the games of some of the guys at the top of the draft, I think teams came back around to Penix. He had a great pro day from what I understand, and he probably interviewed really, really well for a guy with that experience. So I think maybe the personal aspect of the draft has helped Penix out a lot.
It's interesting if Penix does go anywhere around the 10 range, which, boy, that would be quite the change, because we're talking about a guy that was a round two selection late round one. If he moves all the way up into that top 10 realm, that's going to bump a lot of quality players backwards, and that's going to be really interesting for the teams to draft anywhere from 13 back. So this is going to be interesting, and this is what's really intriguing. Michael Penix, you said he didn't play great in the national title game. No, he didn't. But if you watched Washington all the way the rest of the season, had a phenomenal season. had a great season. Hey, he also had some really good weapons to throw to, like Rome Odunze, but still, he was a really, really good, solid quarterback, stayed healthy. Was banged up there at the end, but as Mike Tomlin would say, the bumps and bruises associated with the game of football. Correct. So let's do you use that as a coach, by the way? Do you use that Tomlinism?
In various forms, for sure. Jeff, right, I don't think it's totally up. I don't think it's unrealistic for there to be six quarterbacks that go in the top 12. Because think about it, the top three teams, I think, are all taking quarterbacks. Then let's say one of those three is not Daniels, and the Raiders see the opportunity to move up and get him. The Raiders pick at 13. So maybe they trade up. I mean, the Arizona Cardinals have basically said, like, hey, for the right price, we'll trade the fourth pick. So, or you could have Atlanta at number eight who wants a defensive player, and nobody else seems to be in the market for a defensive player early. They could trade back. So now you could have four quarterbacks going potentially the top eight, and then you have Minnesota and Denver sitting there at 11 and 12. If Minnesota says, hey, man, we want Penix at 11, the Broncos might, you know, they might say, well, we don't want to be shut out of this, and maybe they take Bo Nix. You know, maybe they say, like, my gosh, if we don't take Nix now, somebody jumps in at the end of the first round to take him, and now we're shut out of the best quarterbacks. And I got six quarterbacks going in the top 12. And like you said, maybe a really talented player like a Tarian Arnold or a Quinyon Mitchell gets pushed down into the teens, and now you get a bidding war for those guys from the teams that are in the 20s. It's going to be fascinating.
This is why the draft is popular.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to our next topic. This could be the first time in the history of the draft where no defensive player is taken in the top 10. Is this a weak draft on defense, or is it just that offense has become such a high priority that everyone's thinking about that side of the ball first? What's your take? Because I'm curious.
Yeah, my take is yes on both. Because first of all, if you look at the top 10, we've covered the first three teams, quarterback teams. Arizona at four, probably going to take Marvin Harrison if they stay at four. And then you've got the Chargers at five, and they need receivers because they lost Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. And then you got the Giants at six, and they seem to be receiver needy. Tennessee and Joe Alt at seven, that seems like a done deal. If you skip Atlanta at eight, Atlanta's seems to have their eyes on some edge rushers. You know, nine is the Bears again, and they're probably going to take a receiver. And then 10 is the Jets, and they love Brock Bowers. Out of that top 10, the only team that seems to be defensive prioritizing defense is Atlanta. And, you know, Atlanta could say, hey, 10, 11, 12, and 13, they're all quarterback needy teams too. Man, we could move down and have our pick of whatever edge rusher we want. You could conceivably see them move out of the top 10. And the whole top 10 go offense. It's never happened before. And I think that, yes, there is a tremendous demand right now for skill players amongst those top 10 teams. But you don't have an elite edge rusher. When you look at the players who tend to go in the top 10 on defense, they tend to be stud defensive tackles, interior linemen, and star edge rushers. And I think this draft is devoid of both. I think there are some really good ones, but none who are, guys that are going to be first team all pro guys that teams are going to scramble to acquire. So the absence of those great three techs and edge guys and the need for quarterbacks and receivers has deprioritized defense.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems like it's been a while since there's been a defender who was considered the top overall pick. There's been defenders that have been the top overall pick in 2022. Trayvon Walker was the top pick for the Jacksonville Jaguars. He was a defensive end. And then you go back to Myles Garrett in 2017 with the Cleveland Browns, but Jadeveon Clowney in 2014, it's always kind of been leaning towards the offensive side of the ball. But even when you talk about this draft in particular, you mentioned it, there's just not a lot of defenders that are being discussed as top tier talents. And even when you think back a few years ago, you had Sauce Gardner, who kind of came out of nowhere in terms of overall national perspective. And he was like, "What? Where did this guy come from?" But he's a really good player, really good corner. I don't even see one of those in this draft class. So I agree with you. I think it's kind of a little bit of both as it pertains to why, you know, the NFL is trending more towards offense. And let me ask you this question. Today, Monday, the Steelers had their press conference with Omar Khan and Mike Tomlin, and they asked Mike Tomlin what he thought about why receiver depth is just constant. every class. Like, you could, hey, have your pick at receiver because they're all good. He said that obviously in college, a lot of teams are running three wide receivers all the time. So they're getting more players acclimated. But also, he said 7-on-7 is becoming more and more prevalent. And so they're doing it all year. It's not just in season. You should know this as a high school coach. Do you think that also is a detriment to the defense as well? That these 7-on-7 tournaments and stuff, like, there's really not a lot of defense being played. Yes, from the, on the outside and cornerbacks. What's your take on that?
7-on-7 is a nightmare for defense. We hate it. We hate it. We hate it for lots of reasons. One, I think it teaches bad habits for quarterbacks because you can stand back there for 6 seconds. You can see the whole field. I can see where all the defenders are. Oh, it's cover two. Oh, there's no clutter in my face. So it builds bad habits. As a wide receiver, you don't have to worry about running a crossing route and having the linebacker, you know, like, knock your block off. I mean, you don't have to worry about any of that stuff. I mean, defense cheats too. You know, we go 7-on-7 and the linebackers are lined up 8 yards off the ball. You're just like, yeah, come on, man. You know, can I run the ball here? They're 8 yards off the ball. So I think it builds bad habits, but it also encourages an awful lot of, it's fun. So it encourages guys to go play receiver. And if you're a star, or if you're a super athletic kid, you can really kind of show out in 7-on-7 and attract a lot of attention. A kid in our area just signed with Alabama, just committed to Alabama. He's an excellent football player on the field, but he really got noticed playing on a national 7-on-7 team. So I think that absolutely has contributed to the tremendous rise, that and obviously the emphasis on spread schemes.
Yeah. All right, let's go to our last topic here. 5 years from now, who will we be saying is the best NFL player from this 2024 draft class? This is a tough question.
It is. Obviously, it's hard to kind of look into that crystal ball. I think there's four guys right now, and they're all on offense, who are the most pro-ready players. I think there's four guys who, if you put them on an NFL field right now, they would look the part. And I think it's Brock Bowers. I think it's Joe Alt. I think it's Marvin Harrison Jr. And I think it's Talizi Fuaga, the big lineman out of Oregon State, Oregon. So out of those four, you know, I don't know, man. It all depends on where they go and how they get developed. But I'm tempted to make a boring selection here and say Joe Alt. I think Joe Alt is a perennial all-pro player who winds up starting for probably Tennessee on day one. And 10 years from now, he's still starting for Tennessee.
Okay. I'm going to lean on you for this one because you know more about these outlying players than me. But I'm still scarred from the 2022 draft class where the Pittsburgh Steelers took Kenny Pickett in pick 20, the only quarterback taken in the first round that year. And that was an awful draft class. So I want to revisit the same question I just read, but in 5 years from now, which quarterback will we be saying was the best in this class?
That's tricky. I'm not sold on any of them. It could be Penix. I wouldn't be shocked if it were Penix.
Well, you're just pumping him up to the moon, man.
I just feel like when you look at his game, all this, the caveat to all this is, you know, do they get into the right system? Are they like CJ Stroud, right? I think if CJ Stroud went to Carolina last year, you'd have a different narrative about him, which isn't to say he'd fall on his face, but he wound up with the right franchise that had good skill players and a good scheme, and they protected him and a coordinator who understood how to use him. That's going to be true of all these guys. I think McCarthy's got pro-ready tools. You know, obviously Caleb Williams, if he can handle the noise, and if he, you know, I think his biggest issue is going to be off the field stuff. But if the Bears, who are traditionally horrendous at handling quarterbacks, can get it right with him, he's the most talented guy.
Yeah.
But McCarthy and Penix, I think, are two guys who have translatable skills to the NFL.
It's going to be fun to watch. It'll be interesting. And when you look at these draft classes, everyone likes to label them, this is a great class or this is a bad class. We'll see. We'll see. 5 years down the road, some of these guys might not even be in the league anymore. Maybe they're backups. You know, you just don't know. So we'll see how that goes. Let's do our profile. It's not a player profile. It's some people call this man the devil in disguise. It's Roger Goodell. You want to talk about good old Uncle Roger. Go ahead.
Well, this is Roger's time to shine, the NFL draft. And I
makes you want to puke.
I want to get your thoughts on Roger Goodell, but let me share this real quick. I think it's interesting how he's almost embraced kind of like a WWE character. You know, the fact that he's treated like a heel at the NFL draft. Booing Roger Goodell has become a tradition at the NFL draft. And he has now, you know, welcomed it. For that, hey, he's a good sport. I got my opinions on him otherwise, but I'd like to hear yours.
Hey, the heel turn is great. Like, you know, come on, bring it on, Detroit, when they're booing him. Like, hey, yeah, embrace it. You know, pull the Vince McMahon from WWE. Be that guy that wants. I can't stand, like, the player hug stuff. Like, oh, my gosh. Can we get this guy off the stage? It's not your moment. It's their moment. Have the jersey on a hanger and let the player come out and take it off the hanger and wear it. Roger Goodell, get the hell off the stage. Like, it's not about you at this point. It's about them and the accomplishment of getting drafted. Roger Goodell is a phenomenal commissioner in the National Football League. Why? Because he makes all those freaking owners a crap ton of money. And that's what they hire him to do. Is he a great commissioner in terms of the rules and the way that they're manipulated and the way the game's officiated? Hell no. We talk about that weekly during the season on this show. But ultimately, he's hired to do one job, make owners money. And this event, I will say this, has become massive under Roger Goodell's when he's been in charge of the NFL, just been massive. And he's a reason for that. He's been the one that said, let's move it around. Let's not just have it in New York City. Let's take it to Kansas City, to Philadelphia when you went, to Detroit, to Green Bay. Let's get all these places. I think it was in Cleveland a couple years ago. But Roger Goodell, he serves a purpose. I'm not the biggest fan, but nonetheless, the NFL draft is what it is. Probably a lot of that is because of him. So you can say what you want about him making deals with the devil in terms of sports books and gambling on football and stuff like that. But nonetheless, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. I just don't understand how a guy who's so smart in one area, the marketing aspect, can be so utterly tone deaf in some of these other areas, such as when it comes to treating, you know, NFL alumni who have concussion issues, or when it comes to player conduct and those types of things. To, you know, how do you arrive late to the party on spousal abuse and things like that? You know, like, that's the stuff where I don't get. And maybe it's the whole protecting the brand, circle the wagons and protect the brand. Maybe that's what he's called to do, and that's what he does. But that's something that, where if he got out in front of those issues, I think he'd be even more of an effective commissioner, but seems to be tone deaf to those things.
Yeah. And it's not going to change. He hasn't changed yet, so I don't expect him to, but that's going to be a lot of fun this Thursday night. We're going to have a lot of good stuff coming up. I direct everyone's attention to you and Brian Davis did the FFSN mock draft. That was a great podcast. It was great to see all the contributors contributing their picks. No, it's not going to pan out that way because I didn't allow trades. When you don't have a second round, you can't have trades. Like, then we just turn into just people doing mock draft simulators. Like, oh yeah, I'll trade up to three. Like, okay, that's not going to work that way. But you did a great job with that. You got a call sheet coming up. You already teased a little bit of what's happening there. What else do you have coming up?
Yeah, me and Big G Sean Gurley gonna talk through some of our favorite prospects in the draft. And I just finished up my last prospect breakdown for YouTube. It's on Brock Bowers. And these guys won't be prospects a week from now, they'll be pros.
That's right. And we'll be here to cover it. We'll be back next week on the NFL Whip Around to talk all about the what happened, what didn't happen, all the trades, all that good stuff right here on the Fans First Sports Network. So make sure you check it out. In the meantime, Coach, thank you for your time as always. We'll talk next week. Take it easy.